Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Spring into greens. Spinach is one of those vegetables that is so versatile and doesn't get enough credit. This is an awesome vegetable filled with vitamins and minerals such as vitamin C, K, A, iron, folic acid, and calcium. Spinach may help lower blood pressure, reduce oxidative stress, and even prevent cancer. So how can we incorporate more of this leafy green into our diet? Although some might think one form of spinach is better than the other, there is not much difference between fresh, canned, and frozen spinach. Fresh spinach is great for salads and sandwiches. Frozen spinach may be ideal for sauces, smoothies, and soups. Canned spinach can be sautéed and used in dips. Regardless of how spinach is prepared, it's a great way to add nutrients to each meal. Fresh spinach contains 90% water and is low in calories, making it a great option for year-round eating, but especially when higher temperatures are coming up. When fresh spinach isn't in season, we can find it in the frozen section. Frozen spinach is blanched before freezing. Due to this process causing a loss in water mass, the spinach is condensed, thus making the nutrient content much more concentrated per cup. This provides a little bit more calories than fresh spinach, but just as nutritious. Since it's picked in season and frozen, you may find some better deals here throughout the year over its fresh counterpart. Another thing to take into consideration would be that it cooks up differently than fresh or canned. It is still so versatile, but has a more concentrated flavor. Canned spinach will provide you with the softest texture and may have a greenish-brown appearance. Canned spinach is also condensed, like frozen, thus providing us with concentrated nutrients. This form of spinach may also be easier to digest and absorb nutrients due to it already being cooked down. This would be especially helpful for babies, young toddlers, or when the body is healing from trauma. Canned spinach also has more magnesium than its fresh or frozen counterparts, which is due to the heating process in canning. The downside is that canned spinach may have more sodium since it's more condensed. If you are buying canned spinach, be sure to rinse the spinach once out of the can or opting for low sodium or no salt added alternatives. With no cooking required, this is a great time saver as well. Despite their differences, fresh, frozen, and canned spinach provide great nutrients and go well with many meals. And as we spring into green, it's not just about spinach, but getting a variety of greens and other colors is key. Think lettuce, kale, broccoli, arugula, sprouts, Swiss chard, and the list goes on. This day in history. On April 17, 1961, some 1,500 CIA-trained Cuban exiles launched the disastrous Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba in an attempt to topple Fidel Castro, whose forces crushed the incursion by the third day. And on this date in 1521, Martin Luther went before the Diet of Worms to face charges stemming from his religious writings. Luther was later declared an outlaw by Holy Roman Emperor Charles V. In 1961, The Apartment won the Academy Award for Best Picture of 1960. Burt Lancaster was named Best Actor for Elmer Gantry, while the Best Actress Award went to Elizabeth Taylor for Butterfield 8. In 1964, Ford Motor Company unveiled the Mustang at the New York World's Fair. In 1969, a jury in Los Angeles convicted Sirhan Sirhan of assassinating Senator Robert F. Kennedy. In 1970, Apollo 13 astronauts James A. Lovell, Fred W. Hayes, and Jack Swigert splashed down safely in the Pacific 4 days after a ruptured oxygen tank crippled their spacecraft while en route to the moon. In 1972, the Boston Marathon allowed women to compete for the first time. Nina Kosick was the first officially recognized women's champion with a time of 3 hours, 10 minutes, and 26 seconds. In 1973, Federal Express, later FedEx, began operations as 14 planes carrying 186 packages took off from Memphis International Airport, bound for 25 U.S. cities. In 1975, Cambodia's five-year war ended as the capital, Phnom Penh, to the Khmer regime, which instituted brutal, radical policies that claimed an estimated 1.7 million lives, until the regime was overthrown in 1979. In 1986, at London's Heathrow Airport, a bomb was discovered in the bag of Anne Marie Murphy, a pregnant Irish woman about to board an LL jetliner to Israel. She'd been tricked into carrying the bomb by her Jordanian fiancé, Nizar Hendali. In 1991, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed above 3,000 for the first time, ending the day at 3,004.46, up 17.58. Tony says, here's a letter to Tony. I'm turning 65 in July and not receiving my Social Security check. Last week, I tried to open a My Social Security account to enroll in Medicare online and discovered that my Social Security account is blocked. 2 years ago, someone falsely filed for a tax refund with my Social Security number. Now, anything that involves me or my spouse's Social Security number, credit report, or IRS information is locked and cannot be used. Can you please explain how I can enroll in Medicare when I cannot open my Social Security account? Tony responds, most Americans who are turning 65 and not receiving a Social Security check, one should apply for Medicare by visiting ssa.gov/Medicare/signup. At least 3 months prior to turning 65 for Medicare Parts A and B to begin the first day of the month turning 65. But a fraud situation with your Social Security number can lock you out of opening a My Social Security account prior to turning 65. Both you and your spouse's Social Security numbers are locked by both the IRS and Social Security, and this is keeping you from applying for Medicare online. For anyone who is locked out of their Social Security account due to a fraud situation, the quickest way to enroll is to visit a local Social Security office. You can find your specific Social Security office by searching online with your zip code. This office can unlock your Social Security number for both you and your spouse to open a My Social Security account and enroll you in Medicare online to begin the first day of the month you turn 65. I would advise you and your spouse to not leave that Social Security office until your My Social Security account has been either reopened or a new account has been started and your Medicare enrollment is finalized. For those turning 65 who need to enroll in Medicare and do not have their Social Security account locked, like this lady's, is to go online to ssa.gov/Medicare/signup to enroll in Medicare. If you do have a My Social Security account, have your username and password handy to begin Medicare enrollment. If you don't have a My Social Security account, open a My Social Security account at ssa.gov/myaccount. To be prepared to apply for Medicare Parts A and B when turning 65 and not working full-time with employer health insurance or covered by a spouse's employer health insurance. Here are the different situations for applying for Medicare when turning 65. First, turning 65 and receiving your Social Security, you should receive your Welcome to Medicare kit by mail with your new Medicare card 90 days prior to turning 65. Turning 65 and not receiving your Social Security check, you do not get an automatic Welcome to Medicare kit with your Medicare card. You must visit ssa.gov to enroll in Medicare 90 days prior to turning 65 for your Medicare Parts A and B to begin the first day of the month you turn 65. Turning 65 and still working with employer's benefits, Medicare allows you to delay your Medicare whether you or your spouse are working full-time with employer benefits, not retirement benefits. If you think you are confused about how to enroll in Medicare when turning 65, wait until you jump into the maze of Medicare's health and prescription drug plan options. Chapter 1 of Tony's Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition explains ways to enroll in Medicare. Contact the Tony Says Medicare team at 832-519-8664 or email info@tonisays.com regarding your Medicare options. Tony's new Confused About Medicare video series is available at tonysays.com. Obituaries. Paula Jane Winton DeBolt, age 89, passed peacefully on April the 4th in her home. A memorial service will take place on Saturday, April the 27th at 11 a.m. at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Harlingen, Texas. Following the service, a reception will be held at the church. Ernest Fritz Lester passed away on April the 8th. Memorial service is pending. Jackie Chandler Marker died on April the 14th. Visitation will be held April the 19th between 5 and 7 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. A celebration of life service will be held Saturday, April the 20th at 1 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Adon Subia Pina, age 82 of Odessa, passed away on April the 11th. The recitation of the Rosary will be held at 6 p.m. Thursday, April the 18th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, April the 19th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Teresa Shojek, age 63, of Marble Falls, Texas, passed away on April the 7th. A memorial service at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa will be held for family at a future date. Joe Chandler Irwin, age 83, of Odessa, died Monday, April the 15th. Funeral service will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, April the 19th at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud for April 16th, 2024 by staff report. The Odessa and Midland Police Departments are planning a memorial service on Thursday, May 9th to honor all fallen officers across Texas. The public memorial service is scheduled to take place at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa ahead of the National Police Memorial Week, May 12th through the 18th. The public is encouraged to honor police officers killed in the line of duty by replacing their porch lights with blue bulbs from Saturday, May 12th through Saturday, May 18th. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org live stream. Father of MC softball player inspires team amid cancer battle, April 16, 2024, by staff report. The Midland College softball team's April 19th battle against Western Texas College will be more than a couple of conference games. It will be a testament to strength, resilience, and community. In that matchup, the MC Lady Chaps will play in honor of Richard Lopez, father of sophomore infielder Lauren Lopez. Richard has been battling cancer, but he has completed his final treatment. The team has been inspired by his courage, said Coach Angel Castro. We see his strength, courage, and determination shine through his daughter, Lauren, every single day. He said, Richard will get the honor of throwing out the first pitch on April 19th. I am who I am because of my dad, said Lauren Lopez. I was always smaller than everyone, but he taught me to play big, not only in softball, but in my life. He has been fighting so hard and continuously teaching this team to never give up, to fight with all you have. Lauren expressed gratitude to her team and coaches for supporting her during a difficult time. They have been there for me, and without them, I don't think I would have been able to make it through this difficult time, she said. During the upcoming game, MC will also honor three employees who work closely with the MC Lady Chaps softball team, Associate Director of Admissions and Pathways Advising Amy Hernandez, and groundskeepers Dake Schmidt and Jacob White. Amy, Jacob, and Dake have all been a pivotal part of the success of this program, Coach Castro said. Knowing that there are people who believe in these young women who invest emotionally in their success fuels their performance and really gives us all a sense of purpose. Without their support, we wouldn't be able to reach the heights we have, both in the classroom and on the field. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station, www.recordinglibrary.org, live stream.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, April 11th. Community rallies in wake of child's death. GoFundMe for funeral expenses of 4-year-old student who died unexpectedly surpasses goal. The story was written by B. K. Richter. Organizers of a GoFundMe for the funeral expenses of a 4-year-old Ector County student who died unexpectedly after a medical emergency at school are receiving support from community members. According to a GoFundMe page organized by Odessa resident Susie Salazar, a fundraiser is being organized on behalf of Naomi Urias. The fundraiser states, quote, "We are devastated to share the heartbreaking news of the sudden loss of our beloved baby Ezekiel," end quote. The Urias family wrote that the 4-year-old Lamar Elementary student, identified as Ezekiel Urias, quote, "was a bright light in our lives, filled with joy, laughter, and an infectious energy that touched everyone he met. His love for his woody dolls and playful antics with his siblings brought endless smiles to our faces," end quote. The family also wrote via the GoFundMe page that, quote, "Ezekiel's passing was unexpected. Ezekiel tragically passed away while at Lamar Elementary School, where he was supposed to be enjoying his day like any other child. The news of his passing while taking a nap has left us shattered beyond words," wrote the family. Thus far, the fundraising efforts have reached $22,609 via 463 donations. The goal of the fundraiser had been set at $15,000. Ballpark Bites. Rockhound's food concessions bring classic staples to life. Baseball is America's national pastime, and that thought is given affirmation after stepping through the gates of Momentum Bank Ballpark. The Midland Rockhounds' first homestand of the season was Tuesday when they faced off against the Amarillo Sod Poodles. The sights, the sounds, the tastes, and even the smells of a live baseball game can't be replicated. The first order of business was to sample all of the classic ballpark fare and then move on to some of the customized treats. The first item of interest was at Rocky's Grill House, where one could smell the sausage wraps from across the ballpark. With fresh green bell peppers offered on a warm flour tortilla, this item is a must-have. The cotton candy was a nice addition. Next up was the Game Time Grill, which offered a wide selection of entrees such as Domino's Pizza, hamburgers, cheeseburgers, and chicken tenders. A word to the wise, Domino's sells out quickly, so if you have the craving for a pizza, then don't delay in getting one after arriving at the ballpark. The chicken tenders and delicious fries offered a warm meal on a brisk day. So, naturally, the items were savored after securing a seat inside the Pro Petro Diamond Club. The Diamond Club does offer its own menu, along with complimentary popcorn for members. After the chicken tenders hit the spot, the taqueria was next up on the list of places to try. Instinctively, and if one asks the concession workers, the Nachos Grande is a must-try. Think classical nachos with beef added to the mix, smothered in the golden drippings of cheddar cheese. Then add lettuce, tomatoes, sour cream, guacamole, and last but certainly not least, the jalapenos, perhaps the most important ingredient. Next up, the mission was to find a nice drink to wash it all down. Guests of the ballpark will be pleased to know that a variety of alcoholic drinks is available for purchase, from Moscow mules to delicious margaritas and several selections of draft beer. One of the most popular items, at least in the press box, is the Philly cheesesteak. There was a brief rumor in the press room that the cheesesteak had been discontinued, but as the search continued, there was a light at the end of the tunnel. The Philly cheesesteak proved to be one of the most delicious staples of the ballpark, complete with all of the smells of the meaty dish. Rest assured, there were other stops to make along the path to memorable concessions. The hunt for the jumbo peanut butter and jelly bacon hot dog was the last pit stop on the journey for ballpark food adventures. Sadly, this delicacy also sells out rather quickly. So again, a word to the ballpark aficionado. Secure this hot dog upon arrival. I did manage to secure a jumbo hot dog and a beautiful pretzel. The Rockhounds continue to face off against the Sod Poodles this week for night games. Secure tickets to a game and enjoy not only one of America's favorite pastimes, but also indulge in true, delicious, one-of-a-kind flavors. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, April 11th. Barbara Ferguson, age 82 of Midland, passed away on April 8th. Barbara was born December 27, 1941, in Gorman, Texas, to Ralph and Leona Ball. She attended Breckenridge High School and was active at Bethany Baptist Church, where she met her husband, Gwynn Ferguson. They married in Breckenridge in 1961. Beginning in the late 2000s, Barbara started packing shoeboxes at Bellevue for Operation Christmas Child through Samaritan's Purse. This was just one more way that Barbara loved to share the glory of the Lord. She packed shoeboxes for many years before she joined leadership by serving in church relations, where she would speak at local churches and businesses about the mission of Operation Christmas Child. She continued to serve in leadership and received her 10-year pin of service only months before her passing. Barbara is survived by her husband of 63 years, Gwynn Ferguson of Midland, daughter Janice Smith and her husband Randy of Little Rock, Arkansas, son Mark Ferguson and his wife Christine of Little Rock, Arkansas, and several grandchildren. Visitation will be on Thursday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A celebration of life will be Friday, April 12th at 2 p.m. at Bellevue Baptist Church. Interment will follow at 3 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Samaritan's Purse Operation Christmas Child. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Shirley Marie Johnson Howard was born on May 28, 1952 in Midland to Richard Johnson and Maddie Maxwell Johnson Thomas. She peacefully passed away on Monday, April 1st, surrounded by family. She attended schools in the Midland Independent School District and graduated from Midland High School, where she participated in sports. She was baptized at an early age and was a member of Faith Temple Church of God in Christ under the leadership of Reverend W.C. Keenan. Shirley was also a lifelong Girl Scout and served as a counselor and nurse for several years in both Texas and Oklahoma. She received her degree from Texas Women's University and worked as a nurse at various hospitals in Texas and Oklahoma, including Midland Memorial Hospital. After retiring from nursing, Shirley became passionate about education and dedicated herself to finding at-risk students in the Midland community. She started as a bus driver and used that role to encourage student enrollment in schools. She worked for Midland ISD for 24 years and was well known for her strong leadership skills and advocacy for children, senior citizens, and educators. Shirley served on numerous community boards, including the Red Cross, United Way, Parks and Recreation, Washington Swimming Pool, Midland Education Association, Texas State Teachers Association, and also served as board president. Her passing is mourned by her family, friends, and community. She was preceded in death by her father, Richard L. Johnson, in 1957, mother, Maddie Mae Maxwell Johnson Thomas, in 2008, stepfather, James B. Thomas, brothers, Richard L. Johnson, Claude Lee Johnson, Bobby Johnson, and sisters Anne Marie Johnson and Phyllis K. Johnson. She is survived by her husband, Stuart Howard of Midland, daughters Danetta and Erica Howard, three stepsons, Gary Howard of Dallas, Texas, Albert L. Howard of Dallas, Texas, and Marcus Howard of Chicago, Illinois. Siblings, Clyde Miller of Dallas, Glenn Johnson of Fayetteville, North Carolina, Larry Brackens of Round Rock, Texas, and Christy Whitley of Midland. She also leaves behind her goddaughter, Demetria Moore of Gainesville, Florida, and special daughter, LaCarla Howard. Lillian Mary Woodley, age 79, passed away on April 6th. The family has entrusted services to Blessing Funeral Home in Mansfield. A mass of Christian burial will be held at St. Jude's Catholic Church on Friday, April 12th at 10 a.m., followed by committal at Calvary Cemetery. A visitation will be held on Thursday, April 11th between the hours of 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. in the Blessing Colonial Chapel. Betty Lou Taylor, age 88, of Midland, passed away April 8th. The family will receive guests from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday, April 14th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, April 15th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Hobbs shares success story of Page 27 Designs. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Kirsten Hobbs discussed the growth of her business, Page 27 Designs, and fostering a positive work environment at the Founders Blend one-year anniversary event. Page 27 Designs, a local business, offers branding, printing, custom apparel, and more. Hobbs, a Midland College graduate, started a photography business following her graduation. In 2019, she launched Page 27 Designs. Hobbs described the first few years of operation as challenging, a common experience for small businesses. The onset of the COVID-19 pandemic shortly after founding the business compounded these challenges. Quote, "But it was a really good acclimation period for me," Hobbs said. Initially, Hobbs found it difficult to hire staff members. However, business began to improve in 2021 and 2022. Page 27 upgraded its equipment and expanded its customer base. In 2023, the company formed a team of employees, hired a business coach, and moved to a new suite next to the original location. Quote, "Because I now have a team, which is awesome, that has led me to delegate a lot of tasks to them," Hobbs said. "They were all on my plate, and I was doing everything myself, working long hours. Now, with my team, I can delegate all those tasks, allowing me to focus more on other aspects of the business, like marketing. We launched our new website recently," Hobbs added. She aims to create positive relationships and frequently asks her team about the pros and cons of their jobs. Quote, "In all of my employee interviews, I always ask, what would have to happen for you to quit once you're hired? And they've all said the same thing, a toxic working environment," Hobbs said. Hobbs also seeks to provide Chaparrals and other local students with employment opportunities in the area. Quote, "That's always been something I've advocated for, especially since, when I was at Midland College, having the opportunity to work at a print shop or anything similar that would have provided me with experience, I would have absolutely loved that," Hobbs said. She added that she aims to provide employment opportunities for local high school students in the future. Hobbs said she prioritizes continuing education and training for her and her team in the field of graphic design. Page 27 Designs is located at 206 North Midkiff Road in Midland.
Lee's Bistro, now open in Midland, offering Vietnamese fare. For months, I had passed by the Lee's Bistro Coming Soon sign on Wall Street near the intersection of Andrews Highway and Garfield with Hope. Now, this locally owned gem is open, serving fresh homemade Vietnamese dishes, sandwiches, salads, wings, and teas. Although Lee's Bistro recently opened, and my profiles typically focus on established locally owned businesses, the owners of Lee's Bistro already have a strong Midland presence with their other restaurant, I Love Pho. When I met a friend for a late weekday lunch, I found the restaurant quiet and mostly empty. However, after my dining experience, I suspect and hope this will be short-lived. Lee's Bistro features a neat, no-frills dining room where patrons can watch their food being prepared in the spotless kitchen. Open every day except Wednesday, the restaurant offers a pleasant space, particularly suited for lunch, with a brightly painted interior and natural light streaming in from the wall of windows. The service was quick and friendly without being intrusive. The menus posted online and through delivery services reveal a focus on soup, salad, sandwiches, and lighter lunch fare. However, to the delight of my lunch companion and me, the dine-in menu at Lee's also features a broader selection of Vietnamese dishes, including seafood and ramen. We began the meal with an order of two egg rolls, which arrived quickly with crisp, crackly wrappers, a flavorful vegetable-centric filling, and a side of sweet and spicy dip. My companion ordered the salt and pepper shrimp, searching for a local dish that mirrored her favorite shrimp dish in Las Vegas. She reported that Lee's satisfied her craving without the expense of a plane ticket. The shrimp were served battered and fried in a light seasoned rice flour breading atop a bed of sauteed onions and jalapenos. The crisp breading wasn't oily and the delicate flavor of the shrimp stood out. A side of rice and a small fresh salad completed the reasonably sized portion. As a noodle enthusiast, I ordered the spicy beef filet ramen soup, topped with lightly steamed vegetables, crunchy bean sprouts, and a flavorful pickled mix. The beef strips in the ramen were plentiful and tender. Although the red pepper depicted on the menu should have been a warning, I was still surprised by the heat level. However, the broth's rich flavor was evident, even with the spice. The ramen portion was large enough for leftovers, which was perfect after adding some extra noodles to temper the heat. With a varied menu and most dishes priced under $15, Lee's Bistro offers something for everyone. My next visit will be for Sunday brunch to try the bo nay, a Vietnamese breakfast dish with eggs and various proteins. Or perhaps a takeout lunch for a lighter sandwich on a fresh baguette baked daily. Or even an afternoon visit for a cup of tea and an order of mango sticky rice before mangoes go out of season. Regardless, I know I'll return to Lee's Bistro soon to enjoy the fresh dishes, reasonable prices, and friendly service. I continue to recommend this spot for a quick and pleasant local meal in Central Midland. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. Midland Health, a need for better advanced care planning. National Healthcare Decision Day was April 16th. Although it is a day to bring the important topic of advanced care plans to the forefront, it is something that can be addressed any day of the year. This day is to educate and empower someone to take the steps to make yours and your loved one's advanced directives. What is an advanced directive, you may ask? It is a written statement/document of a person's wishes regarding his, her medical treatment. These documents are made to ensure those mentioned wishes are carried out should the person not be able to communicate. The four types of advanced directives are directive to physicians and family, or surrogates, medical power of attorney, out of hospital do not resuscitate order, and declaration of mental health treatment. Let's learn a little more about what each of these allows. The directive to physicians and family or surrogates allows you to specify for the provision, withdrawal, or withholding of medical care in the event of a terminal or irreversible condition. This document is designed to help you communicate your wishes about medical treatment when you are unable to make wishes due to illness or injury. You may want to consider what burdens or hardships of treatment you would be willing to accept versus the amount of benefit obtained if you were seriously ill. It is important to discuss these wishes with your family or chosen spokesperson, physician/healthcare provider, and medical institution. The medical power of attorney allows you to designate another person as your agent/spokesperson for making healthcare decisions if you become incompetent. It is important to note that you do not have to have a terminal or irreversible condition for a medical power of attorney to be used. This begins when your physician certifies that you lack the competence to make healthcare decisions. Your designee has the obligation to follow your instructions when making decisions on your behalf. If you have no instructions, they will have the same authority to make decisions about your healthcare as you would have had. You should inform the person you appoint to this role and discuss any wishes you may have, or other documents filed that would have your wishes included. The out-of-hospital do not resuscitate order allows competent adults to refuse certain life-sustaining treatments. In non-hospital settings where healthcare professionals are called to assist, including hospital ERs and outpatient settings. In addition to this, the last type of directive is the declaration of mental health treatment. This document gives guidance to what types of mental health treatment you would want if you could not speak for yourself. This directive allows a court to determine when you become incapacitated and when that declaration becomes effective. All these forms are available on the Texas Hospital Association website at www.tha.org/information-4/public/advance-directives/. Please print these forms, fill them out, and get them filed in your medical record at Midland Memorial Hospital. To do this, please call Health Information Management at 432-221-1600 and select option 1. Forms can be sent electronically to advancedirectives@midlandhealth.org. In addition, when you are registered as a patient at Midland Health, we will ask you about your advanced directives or if you would like additional information. Health. Global effort to prevent future pandemics. Washington. President Joe Biden's administration will help 50 countries identify and respond to infectious diseases, with the goal of preventing pandemics like the COVID-19 outbreak that suddenly halted normal life around the globe in 2020. U.S. government officials will offer support in the countries, most of them located in Africa and Asia, to develop better testing, surveillance, communication, and preparedness for such outbreaks in those countries. The strategy will help, quote, prevent, detect, and effectively respond to biological threats wherever they emerge, end quote, Biden said in a statement Tuesday. The global health security strategy, the president said, aims to protect people worldwide and, quote, will make the United States stronger, safer, and healthier than ever before at this critical moment, end quote. The announcement about the strategy comes as countries have struggled to meet a worldwide accord on responses to future pandemics. 4 years after the coronavirus pandemic, prospects of a pandemic treaty signed by all 194 of the World Health Organization's members are flailing. Talks for a treaty are ongoing, with a final text expected to be agreed upon next month in Geneva. It's meant to be a legally binding treaty that obliges countries to monitor pandemic threats and share scientific findings. But major disputes have emerged over vaccine equity and transferring the technology used to make vaccines. Even if a deal is hammered out, there would be a few consequences for countries that choose not to abide by the treaty. The U.S. will push on with its global health strategy to prevent future pandemics, regardless of a pandemic treaty or not, a senior administration official told reporters on Monday. Several U.S. government agencies, including the State Department, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Health and Human Services, and the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, will help countries refine their infectious disease response. Health systems around the globe have been overwhelmed with COVID-19 and other health emergencies such as Ebola, malaria, and Mpox, the CDC said in a statement. The new strategy will help countries rebuild their agencies, the U.S. agency explained. Quote, global health security is national security, and CDC is proud to contribute its expertise, investments, and rapid response to protect the health and safety of the American people and the world, end quote. Mandy Cohen, the CDC's director, said in a statement. Congo is one country where work has already begun. The U.S. government is helping Congo with its response to an Mpox virus outbreak, including with immunizations. Mpox, a virus that's in the same family as the one that causes smallpox, creates painful skin lesions. The World Health Organization declared Mpox a global emergency in 2022, and there have been more than 91,000 cases spanning across 100 countries to date. The White House on Tuesday released a website with the names of the countries that are participating in the program. Biden officials are seeking to get 100 countries signed onto the program by the end of the year. The U.S. has devoted billions of dollars, including money raised from private donations, to the effort. Biden, a Democrat, is asking for $1.2 billion for global health safety efforts in his yearly budget proposal to Congress.
Low iron levels might affect donors' depression. Dear Dr. Roach, I am wondering if there is any link between low iron and depression/anxiety. I am a 37-year-old woman, and I started taking Lexapro a few years ago. I upped my dose last year because I wasn't feeling great, and my doctor and I decided that it was a good step to take. During the years that I have been taking Lexapro, I have also been a regular blood donor. I am CMV negative, so I have blood suitable for newborns. The Red Cross says I am a hero for babies, and I enjoy doing something good. I haven't donated in about 5 months, and I am feeling significantly better regarding my depression. I know that donating blood affects iron levels, but does it also affect the concentration of Lexapro in my body? If not, can low iron be contributing to my depression? I would love to know the answer so that I can possibly continue to donate, perhaps less frequently. Dr. Roach answers. First of all, thank you for donating so regularly. CMV is a virus most people have been exposed to, and like most herpes viruses, it stays in the body forever. Newborns and premature babies, as well as organ transplant recipients, need CMV negative blood, and there aren't many CMV negative people who can donate. Depression and anxiety are both tightly linked to the neurotransmitter serotonin. Lexapro doesn't increase serotonin, but it does make the transmission of serotonin from one nerve cell to another more effective by reducing the reuptake of serotonin at the nerve junction. Low iron levels have been shown to reduce serotonin levels, so this may be part of why your depressive symptoms have been worse. However, there are many reasons, both inside and outside of your body, that can make depressive symptoms worse. Still, if you do have low iron levels, you can replace iron faster and keep it normal despite blood donation and menstruation with an iron supplement. It would be best to check on this with your doctor. If your depression then gets better, this would be pretty good evidence that the low iron does affect your mood. You can write to Dr. Keith Roach, R-O-A-C-H, at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Dear Abby, my husband's best friend, Kevin, lost his wife 3 years ago. He's currently in a relationship with his niece, his deceased brother's daughter. Kevin is in his 60s. She's in her 50s. We find this disgusting and do not condone it. They are both from Portugal. Is this accepted in other countries? We have tried to discuss it with him. He said he doesn't care what we think. Kevin tries to plan things for all of us as couples, and we don't want to be in their company. Am I wrong? I have known this niece for several years, and I don't want to be unkind, but I just cannot be around them. His wonderful wife is turning over in her grave. Signed, Scandalized in New Jersey. Dear Scandalized, dear Abby responds, this type of incestuous relationship is not specifically prohibited under Portuguese law, nor is it prohibited in the state of New Jersey. If you don't wish to socialize with this couple, you are not compelled to do it. Your husband can do it without you if he wishes. And another dear Abby, a childhood friend generously invited me to stay at his home for a visit. We had a great time. A few days after I left, he texted me that something expensive was missing from his home and asked if I knew anything about it. I told him I was sorry to hear the bad news, but I don't know what happened. He has now blocked me on all forms of communication. I suppose he thinks I had something to do with the missing item. I wonder if I could have handled the situation differently. Should I have perhaps offered to compensate him for at least part of the value of the missing item, despite not being responsible for its disappearance? I don't want to appear to admit fault, but I'm sad that our friendship has apparently ended over this. Dear Abby responds, if you offer to compensate your host, it will look like an admission of guilt. Don't do it. If you feel you must say anything at this point, write the person a letter expressing that not only are you sorry he is missing the item in question, but also that its disappearance has ended what was, to you, a treasured friendship. Period. And another dear Abby. My husband is a gun owner. I am not. My mother sometimes stays over and sleeps in his office, which doubles as a guest room. My husband tells me before my mother goes into the room to sleep that I should make sure the gun is safely put away in case she snoops around and finds it and an accident happens. I told him that is his responsibility as a gun owner, not mine. I also told him my mother won't snoop in his workstation. He continues to tell me to check it just in case, and I repeat that it's not my responsibility. Whose responsibility to check if the gun is properly put away? My husband or me? Dear Abby answers, you are both responsible to ensure the safety of your guests. Your husband's gun should be safely locked in a gun case to prevent anyone from shooting themselves in the foot, or you or your husband if a bullet should accidentally go through a wall. Because your husband shirks his responsibility in order to protect your mother, you should do it. You can write to Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, April 11th. Spouse endures second loss after wife's passing. Dear Abby, I am trying to come to terms with the passing of my wife, Charlotte, a month ago. Many old friends and family have been supportive. What hurts, in addition to my grief, is the silence from a particular couple. For years, we were very close with this family when we both had young boys growing up. We celebrated all the joys and life-changing events together, including going out to dinner every Friday and vacationing together. Once our boys were on their own, we gradually saw less and less of the couple, but still kept in touch occasionally. When Charlotte passed, they were two of the first people I notified. They were out of town at the time, so I postponed her memorial a day so they could attend. I felt they were so important to us that they should be there. I have not heard one word from this couple. They live a mile away, and I haven't received a dinner invitation or even a phone call. I'm shocked by their lack of caring, knowing I am home alone and devastated over Charlotte's passing. A simple phone call to ask how I'm doing would be helpful. What do you think about this? Signed, Abandoned in New York. Dear Abandon, I am sorry for the loss of your wife. Because it is so recent, your pain must be overwhelming. Regarding this couple, I suspect that once your sons were grown, their friendship with you was already on the wane. While it would have been compassionate for them to have stepped up when they received the news of your wife's passing, they, as many other people, may not have known what to say or do, so they did nothing. If you wish to talk to them, by all means, call them. But when you do, do not expect them to offer more than cursory condolences. Concentrate instead on the friends who have shown that they are willing to be there for you. Dear Abby, I met a man online and have been dating him off and on for the past 4 years. His parents have been living with him since the pandemic, and I have yet to be invited to his home or to meet them. He is from Bolivia and says his parents want him to marry a Catholic Bolivian girl and someone without children. I am divorced, American, and the mother of two. He tells me he's afraid that if I meet them, our relationship will be over. He keeps saying they are moving back to Bolivia, but they are still here. I also have never met his friends. He says he never does anything with his friends between his parents living with him and studying for his architectural exams. After all these years, I have yet to meet one of his friends. What should I do? Signed, Off the Radar in Wisconsin. Dear Off the Radar, recognize that this man may not have been entirely truthful with you about his circumstances. Bluntly put, he may be married, or he may not be who he has represented himself to be in other aspects of his life. Because your relationship hasn't progressed after 4 years of dating, off and on, what you should do is move on. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.